this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 13th, 2009, and this is show number 237. Well, it's last call for you to send in audio reviews for Bart to play on the BartCast next week. Remember, I'm going to be out of town next week, but the show will go on. Bart has a special guest ready for chit-chat across the pond, so it's going to be a great show. If you are going to send in reviews for the BartCast, I need them by this Monday night. So I'm recording on Sunday, that means tomorrow. So if you're listening on Monday, that means today. If it's Tuesday, you're too late, because I got to get those to him before I go out of town. And again, remember, as always, I have a house sitter, so don't even think about robbing my house on account I said I was going to be out of town. Got that all covered. Well, I have a story to tell you that has nothing to do with technology, but it is so fantastic, I have to talk about it on the show. What fun is it having an internationally famous radio show if you can't talk about whatever you want to talk about? All right, here's the setup. We bought Kyle a bike for his birthday just a few weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago. He just started college, and he was delighted to speed up his commute across campus, get a little freedom to ride off campus, too. Well, 3 nights ago, some jerk face stole both of his wheels. Now, before you say, oh, I should have had the wheels locked, he did. He had a cable lock around both wheels and the frame and through the bike rack, and then he had a U-lock holding the frame to the bike rack, which is the only reason his frame is still there, because they very quickly snipped right through the cable lock. We were very, very sad about this, and we debated the wisdom of, you know, even trying again. I mean, what's going to keep him from doing it another time? Well, I thought it was worth trying again, so we carried his bike back into the Sports Authority where we bought it. I gave the guy a kind of a plaintive look. I showed him the cut cable lock that we had bought there, and I asked maybe they could cut us a deal on getting this situation remedied. I was thinking like maybe a percentage off on the new wheels, because I figured we're looking at $100, $150 at least. But he said the weirdest thing. He said, well, the wheels are no problem, but I'll have to ask my manager about the lock. He wandered off, and Kyle and I looked at each other and said, well, wait a minute, did he mean the wheels are going to be free? That can't be what he meant, right? Well, he came back and he told us the wheels were definitely free and they'd give us 25% off on the lock. We were amazed. I mean, we explained that we had planned to come in anyway for some minor adjustments to the bike. It had a few problems. It was clicking in a bunch of the gears, and so we were going to bring it back anyway. They said they'd have to send away for the new wheels, and it could take as long as 2 weeks. But we were so grateful to get the wheels for free. We didn't care. And then the story got better. The manager got involved in the discussion, and he said, hey, you know, why don't we just give you a new bike? We can order the wheels, put them on that bike, you know, put it for sale, you know, slight markdown, and everybody's happy. That way you wouldn't have to wait 2 weeks. Our jaws were on the floor as a third guy scampers off to see if we have one in Kyle's size. But sadly, they didn't have one. So back to plan A. And then it got better still. A fourth guy gets involved, and he says, you know, we do have the newer model of his bike in his size. It's the same price. Would that be okay if we gave him that? And the manager says, sure, no problem. We walked out of Sports Authority with a brand new bike, slightly improved model, 25% off the cost of a new lock, and this new bike, it didn't need any adjustments. It wasn't clicking like the other one. So let me tell you, if you're trying to decide where to buy sports equipment, I sure hope you'll consider what happened to us when making your choice of stores and pick Sports Authority if you have one near you. The customer service we got was nothing like anything I've ever seen before, and I'd have a hard time justifying shopping anywhere else after the way we were treated. Go Sports Authority! Well, let's get into some tech here. We have a review from Evan.
Hello, Allison and NoSillaCast listeners. It's Evan from the iPhone App Weekly Podcast coming at you with another review of a great iPhone app. This week's app is the International Mac Podcast app. This app is done by our friends over at the International Mac Podcast. Launch the app and you are given a list of 7 different options. The top one is download. Tap that and you're taken to the iTunes app on the iPhone and to the IMP directory with a list of all the past episodes available to either stream or, if you are on Wi-Fi, you can download them. The next option is blog, which, without leaving the app, shows you the most recent blog entries. Just tap them to read them. The next option is Team, which gives you a list of every IMP member and a thumbnail picture of the person. If you tap the name of a person, I imagine that it is supposed to display information about the person, but for me, it is just blank. For every person I tap, I just get a blank page. Not sure if it is just me or if this is a bug that is happening for everyone else. Something to improve in the next version, I guess. The next option in the list is Contact, which opens a blank email message with the contact address for the IMP team. The next option is Listen Live, which, when the team is broadcasting the live recording of the show, allows you to listen in and get a piece of the action. The next option is one that takes you into Mobile Safari and then takes you to the impodcast.tv homepage. The last option is Twitter Feed, which again takes you into Mobile Safari to the Twitter page for IMP. I highly recommend that you follow them. The IMP app is available in the App Store for free, and I have given Allison the iTunes link, which I'm sure she'll put in the show notes. To find out more about what I do, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/vamo92, or to hear more great reviews, you can check me out at the iPhone App Weekly Podcast.
Well, thanks, Evan. As soon as I heard your review, I downloaded the IMP application immediately. At least this week you didn't cost me any money. Thanks again for another great review. Well, have you guys heard of Blind Search? It's not what you think. This time it's not an accessibility site to be discussed on Down a Blind Alley with Shane Jackson. The idea of Blind Search instead is to let you open your mind up to different search options. Blind Search does this by returning search results for you from three different search engines at the same time. You get a result from Google, one from Bing, and one from Yahoo. But here's the thing, how it's like a blind taste test. It doesn't tell you which set of results is which. You just get three columns of results, and your job is to vote on which column you think gave you the best results. After you vote for the best one, the three columns reveal their true identity. I think this is a great experiment to do on yourself. Perhaps you've convinced yourself that Google is and always will be the be-all to end-all of search engines, and nothing will ever dethrone it. Come on, you really do kind of think that way, don't you? I kind of do. Anyway, maybe it's time to test yourself and give the other two a chance. Check it out at blindsearch.fejus.com. Do not go to blindsearch.com. That's actually a link farm, so skip that. blindsearch.fejus.com. Let me know what you find out about your own search decisions. When I need to create a tutorial, I turn to Screen Steps immediately. It's so easy to write up the instructions, drop in some screenshots with annotations, then publish to my blog. It's just such a joy. But sometimes I just need one or two screenshots and a small bit of text to put in an email. And when I do that, I have to revert back to tools like Sketch and, you know, just putting typing in the email. Now, don't get me wrong, Sketch absolutely rocks, but, things like I love the drop shadow and all that kind of stuff, but the annotations are pretty crude and elementary. And all it really does is take screenshots. It doesn't do anything else. Well, I never thought to ask Trevor and Greg if they could make Screen Steps work to write a quick email with a Screen Steps tutorial inside it. But they did this without me even asking. In the new Screen Steps, there's a clipboard button. So if you have a lesson showing, it'll show the clipboard button. Click that, and it copies the lesson into the clipboard. And then you can go over to Mail or wherever else, and you just hit Paste, and you have a beautifully formatted email showing your dad or your brother or your customer how to do something on your Mac or PC. It's so easy, you'll actually enjoy teaching them. Check out Screen Steps at screensteps.com, and don't forget the coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price of Screen Steps Desktop. You may remember my review of the BlackBerry Storm about a year ago. I think my final line about it was that when they took it away, I felt like somebody stopped poking me in the eye with a stick. I'd actually let the battery run down so I wouldn't have to even use it for the last week. It was that awful and irritating. Well, today I'd like to tell you about the BlackBerry Storm 2 from Verizon and see how it measures up. They have made some improvements, and we'll see how it works out. I'll be comparing this to the original Storm, the BlackBerry Bold, and the iPhone. First of all, I love the industrial design of the Storm 2. It's sleek and slender with round edges on both ends, so when you hold it in landscape mode to type, it's very comfortable. It has a soft finish to it that's really pleasing, and since it's a touchscreen, there's no, you know, ugly hinges or big nasty buttons on it. It is a simply gorgeous piece of equipment. The people who designed the hardware should really be applauded here. And the screen is very, very bright and crisp. Speaking of the screen, let's talk about the touchscreen. First, we need to rewind to how much I truly despise the original Storm's touchscreen technology. It's called SurePress. It was beautiful to look at, but absolutely horrible to use as a touchscreen for typing. You had to literally depress the entire screen. It kind of rocked on one edge just to get it to register a single letter. So you couldn't type like with two thumbs because it wasn't done coming back up before your other thumb was ready to type. That was the main reason I so thankfully gave the darn thing back. The good news is that the Storm 2 has a much, much better touchscreen. Some functions can be simply selected by touching the screen, like selecting the To field in an email, and then the subject, and then the body. But once you want to type, you still have to use their patented SurePress technology. You do not have to depress the entire screen anymore, which is way better. It depresses right where you're pressing. I'd love to know more about how they actually do this, because when the phone is turned off, you can't push on the screen at all. Well, you can push, but it doesn't indent anywhere where you type. It's simply just completely stiff glass. Only when the phone is active do you can it actually physically react to you. It must be some sort of piezoelectric film or something like that, I'm thinking. Even though this new screen isn't as annoying as the Storm 1, most people pick it up and assume they can just touch instead of pressing. When they figure out they have to push on the screen, they sadly look at me and ask why. While the Storm 2 touchscreen is substantially better, I found that I still prefer the typing experience of a traditional BlackBerry. I like the keyboard on the Bold, or actually my favorite was on the old 8820 series. That was fantastic. And I much prefer the iPhone's touchscreen over this SurePress technology nonsense. I'm about the same speed now on the iPhone and the Bold, but getting fast on the iPhone's virtual keyboard did take a while, I'm going to be honest with you, and it definitely requires a leap of faith to begin to trust it, just like Steve Jobs told us to. It's a very weird thing, but once you begin to trust it, it actually works out, and I'll explain later why that is. I do think it's possible that with a pretty long time on the Storm 2, I'd probably get good on that keyboard too, but 2 weeks of use was not long enough, I'm afraid. Research in Motion made an interesting choice on what to do when you make the inevitable typo. On the iPhone, if you make a mistake, it puts the word it thinks you meant to type right around your finger. If you ignore it and go on your merry way, the iPhone replaces your typo with the correct word, arrogantly assuming that it knows better than you do. This might seem like a poor decision, but in reality, it encourages you to just fly on that virtual keyboard and just assume that the iPhone will simply clean up after you. That's the trust bit I was talking about earlier. When you really just let go and assume that Steve knows best, your typing speed will improve dramatically on the iPhone. It takes most people a very long time to get to this point, too. I would say it was about 6 months for me. But anyway, back to the main point. Apple chose to have their word inserted if you ignore the correction when it pops up. RIM made the exact opposite choice. If you make a typo, it offers you not just the one word, but a bunch of words. If you ignore it, it assumes that you really meant to type it the way you did. That seems logical, but that's almost never the case, because you're more likely to make a typo than to invent a new word. And if it looks like it's a typo, it usually is. With the Storm 2, like any phone, you inevitably will have typos to fix after you're done typing, so let's walk through the different methods each of the phones chose, or the phones didn't choose, the manufacturers chose on their phones, for how to do the editing after the fact, and let's compare those methods. First, on the BlackBerry Bold, you simply scroll to get to where you want to edit, and, you know, that's a little bit of a slow process, but it's intuitive and very predictable. On the iPhone, you touch on the area where the typo is, and you just hold your finger there, and it magnifies the letters in a bubble above your finger, so you can accurately see your cursor location. You start moving it around, you got this little magnifying bubble. This works maybe 90% of the time the way you'd hope it would. Finally, on the Storm 2, when you touch your finger on a word, it puts a transparent frame around the word under your finger. Right. Your finger's not transparent. You can't see through your finger, which means you can't see this transparent frame. You can slide it around like you can the bubble on the iPhone, but since you can't see under your finger to see where you are, you can't tell where it's putting it if it's got it right. So you have to touch and slide, then look, put your finger back down, slide, pick your finger back up, look. It wasn't really very good at all. This is where I really hit a wall with the Storm 2. I don't think I ever once got the cursor exactly where I wanted it. Finally, I decided to just resort to putting it in some location to the right of the word that I needed to correct and then erase by, you know, hitting delete, delete, delete right up to that word and then retyping it. That was a very poor user interface, in my opinion. I was pleasantly surprised with how easily and quickly the Storm 2 rotates from portrait to landscape mode. The iPhone does this pretty well, but every once in a while you find yourself rotating it back and forth like you're trying to shake it to get it to flip when it should, and it doesn't always pay attention to your actions. The Storm 2 reacted 100% of the time and always virtually instantaneously flipped. I was very happy with that. Now, when you flip the orientation of the Storm 2, the keyboard layout changes. The default in landscape mode is QWERTY, which makes sense, but in portrait it defaults to two letters per key. This is pretty much silly for anything but pure email typing. You can't predictably write names or URLs or anything like that in that two letter per key thing. It's very silly. If you go into the settings, though, you can change the keyboard to in the portrait mode to something far worse. You can make it have three letters on each key. Now, what that means is you have to hit each key several times to get the letter you want, just like in the old days of the Motorola StarTAC. You know, I got that phone 11 years ago. I don't really want to go back to that technology. I think I'd like to go forward in technology. Well, finally, they do have a third option for the portrait mode. You can change the portrait keyboard to QWERTY. To me, it's pure silliness to choose anything else. Unfortunately, when this on-screen keyboard comes up, it often takes up a lot of the screen real estate. For example, let's talk about applications for a moment. I loaded up the application App World. That's an application you have to install to get to the application store. Yeah, I know. It's pretty stupid. Anyway, but you download App World, you put it on the phone, now you can get in to buy and get free applications. I went in there and tried to find a Twitter application. Remember when I did that before on the Bold? Well, the App World store is still bereft of many applications, and I couldn't find anything but Uber Twitter in there again. Nothing against Uber Twitter, but I was hoping to try something new. One Twitter client. Anyway, this was really supposed to be about the on-screen keyboard. When you go into the store, you see the search line, one application name, and the rest of the screen is taken up by the keyboard. You have to scroll one at a time through the applications. I thought maybe it'd be a little better in portrait mode, and it was. I mean, you do get two entire application names to view at a time, but the keyboard covers still about 60% of the screen. It was also not clear to me why the keyboard even had to show in that mode. It's there all the time, instead of getting out of the way until you ask for it. On more than one occasion, I was in an application where the keyboard shouldn't have shown, like looking at my calendar, but the keyboard was stubbornly in my way. Back to applications for a second. On a standard BlackBerry, you can move applications around on the screen. It's a little bit weird, but it's workable. You click on an application, and then you launch the menu and choose Move. You can then drag it around on screen until it's where you want it, and then you let go. Not on the Storm 2, however. I was able to select an application, choose Move, but I can't move it. If I drag without hard clicking, it doesn't have any effect other than to scroll the whole menu screen up and down. And if I push on it first, it deselects from the Move command. There must be a way to do this, but I never figured out how to do it, so I gave up. I was very surprised when I received a Microsoft Word attachment in an email, and I tried to open it, and the BlackBerry Storm 2 said, and I quote, "This protocol is not supported by this handset." Oh, come on. I thought all smartphones supported this format these days. Jeez, maybe you got to buy or download Documents to Go or one of those kinds of applications. But I didn't have to do that on my BlackBerry Bold or my iPhone, so again, the Storm 2 disappointed me. As I mentioned, the screen on the Storm 2 is gorgeous. Video playback on the device is absolutely excellent. I tested out the headphones for a phone call, and while they were very tinny sounding, the voice was clear and, you know, audible. Oddly, the microphone pickup on the headphones is placed about 4 inches below your chin when you're wearing the headphones. It seemed to work out okay. The person could hear me quite well. The person I called said that when I was talking, the voice was clear and loud, but when I stopped talking, the mic picked up a ton of ambient noise. This seemed to vary over time. I'm not sure if it was a problem with the mic pickup or what the problem actually was. I tested out the video camera on the Storm 2 against the iPhone 3GS and the BlackBerry Bold. The lighting conditions were tough. I was too lazy to get up and do it in bright light. I was watching TV in a semi-lit room and then switching to have it look at my laptop screen, which was partially dimmed but was still bright, and then I let the brightness up on full, go up on to full on the screen. The Bowl did the best job on this test. You could clearly see what was on TV and then on the monitor. It was compensating beautifully for the changes in lighting conditions. The iPhone did well on the close-up monitor, compensating easily as the brightness came up, but the TV screen in the distance was just completely blown out. So it's seeing the TV screen again with a bunch of dark around it, so it would just overblow the monitor, or the TV in the distance. The Storm 2 was blown out on the TV and the dim monitor and the brighter version of the monitor. It didn't compensate well at all. I don't know if this is the best test of a camera, but the Bold produced the best video results of the three. I did find something interesting in the Storm 2 video, though. They have a specific setting to allow you to view closed captions. That's kind of cool. Not sure where that was supposed to come in, but I ran across it right then. So to recap, on the video camera, it was the Bold, then the iPhone, then the Storm 2. Surprisingly, on the still camera, I would put the three phones in the reverse order. I took a fairly close-up image of a white card with the three cameras, and there was some stuff on it. The Storm 2 took a crisp picture with relatively good white balance. Maybe a tad blue, but not too bad. The iPhone took a crisp picture too, but was significantly shifted to the red. The Bold was a dismal failure. It didn't even focus properly. I wasn't at all happy with it. All right, it's time to bottom line on it. Been going on long enough. The Storm 2 is a beautiful device with a fantastic screen and very comfortable to use. The touchscreen interface is definitely much better than the original Storm, but I still wish they didn't make you push to hit a key. There's a few things they could tweak to make this a much more usable device, specifically things in the editing interface need to change. I don't think the Storm 2 is a bad device at all, but I still prefer typing and editing on the Bold or the iPhone over the Storm 2. The camera is fine, the phone is fine, screen viewing for reading or watching media is fantastic, and holding the device is just so pleasing. Overall, I think I'd go with a B- for the Storm 2, maybe a B, but with a few firmware enhancements, they could bring this up to a solid A. So I'm driving Kyle back from school on Friday, and we got to talking about how sometimes people retire who do things for you. I brought up Honda Bob and my fear that someday he might retire. I told Kyle, even if Honda Bob retires, I'm just assuming he's going to keep taking care of our cars until we die. And then Kyle says, but what about me? I'm going to be driving long after Honda Bob dies, so what am I supposed to do? Okay, it was kind of a morbid conversation, but it was still pretty indicative of how great we think Honda Bob's service is and how much we depend on him for the care and feeding of our cars. If you'd like to be this passionate about your mechanic, and if you drive a Honda or an Acura, and you happen to live in the LA or Orange County areas, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HD Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. And I did not use exciting because I think, Bart, you said you're shattered today.
Yeah, apparently, like a whole day's podcasting is too much for anyone.
We should explain
here. It was
great
fun, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
I feel slightly vindicated because Stu Helm came to me a few months ago and said, I know what we're going to do for Christmas. We're going to do a 24-hour podcast. And I said, you're absolutely mad. Totally insane. So I said, okay, I get the idea, but how's about we do 12 hours? And I'm so glad I talked him down to 12.
So, well, let's explain a little bit of how this worked. So what he basically did was he set up a schedule for every hour for the course of 12 hours on the 12th. And then he got people to sign up for different times. And he got some big names. He got Andy Annotko, for crying out loud.
That's good. I was thinking we could reach. So yeah, it was 12 hours on the 12th of the 12th. Hence, it was called IMP Live 12 Cubed.
Right.
So let me see. In the first, who are our guests? Yes, there they are. So Josh Hollett and Peter Upfolds were on to talk about news. Then the first big name we had was Adam Christensen and Jeff Gamont. Then we had Ken Ray, Katie Floyd, Andy Natko, Michael Johnson, Joseph Nilo, Robert Lockman, Alison Sheridan, don't know who that is. Chuck Tomasi, Matt Hillier, Lane Giles, Justin Byrne, Paul Asadorian, Anthony Gartner, George Starcher, and Matt Hillier again. So pretty good list there.
Yeah, yeah. It was, here's what really amazes me about Stu. So he sets this thing up and he sets up the schedule and everybody knows when they're supposed to be on, but he never tells us, I mean, we had a vague idea of the topic of each of those hours, but he never gives us any kind of talking points, agenda or anything. Here he is. I didn't get on until he was 8 hours in. I was hoping to get him all punchy and stuff, but he was just kind of exhausted, but not quite punchy. But he gets in there and he says, so the first thing that we'd like to talk about is what kind of hardware you use for your podcast. I mean, he had prepared questions, apparently, or he's incredibly good on the fly because he gave us a structure to talk to and it made it a great conversation. I learned a bunch of stuff. I thought it was fantastic.
I think we can give Stu full credit here. I think he was winging it. He's just good at it.
Wow. I mean, I kept saying, you know, Stu, you said there was going to be Google Docs places to talk. You know, we could set up talking points. I want to do an agenda. Da, da, da. And he kept going, yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. And then he didn't get to it. And it was perfectly fine.
It was funny how the earlier in the day segments all had much more show notes than the later in the day segments.
Hmm. Yeah, not surprising. But anyway, so how is he going to be sending these out now, Bart? Is he going to take the next 12 weeks off?
No. Well, first off, it's not going to be one giant big 12-hour show that's 500 squillion gigabytes or anything like that. It's going to be 12 approximately one-hour segments. We had 1 hour pre-recorded so that Stu would have a break in the middle, but we ended up going long with Andy and Atco, so the break sort of vanished a bit. So yeah. Some of them are over an hour, some of them are a little under an hour, but on average they're about an hour. And they're going to go out one a day. And I think Stu said the last one would hit the feed on the 26th of December, which I think means the first one is going to hit the feed on Tuesday.
Okay, great, great. So
unless he's taking Christmas Day off, in which case the first one will hit the feed tomorrow.
So if you want to hear you and I talking together, it would be counting Tuesday as number one. You want to go 8 days away from there.
Or you could count back from the 26th and go the 26th to be Matt Hillier, so the 25th to be Paul Asadorian, so the 4th. About the 24th. Or the 23rd.
Well, that's 12, so you got to go minus 4 at least. It can't be past the 20th. It'd be like the 22nd, wouldn't it? Never mind. Okay, you people are clever. Look until it says what it is.
It's the 23rd.
Oh, you're right,
anyway,
you're right. Okay, so, watch the feed. Listen to them all. Collect all 12.
Well, you really got to start. I mean, you've Robert Lockman on the other side of you, so you couldn't skip Robert. And then you have Elaine Giles and Justin Byrne on the other side. You couldn't skip that either. So
Elaine's wonderful, yeah. I got to get to know her. I've never spoken to her before. She's on, she does Mac Bites, correct?
I would know, but I think you're right.
Except for the fact that your brain is shattered. So do you even remember how many hours you were on?
I could count. No, I took 2 off in the middle and I was supposed to take a few more off, but it didn't entirely happen. So I think I was on for about 8.
Oh my gosh, that's exhausting. Crazy time. All right, well, we've got a couple of things on the agenda here today. What do we have for Security Light today, Bart?
Okay, so where are my show notes? First up, just a reminder, it's been a week since I said Patch Tuesday was coming, which means Patch Tuesday has been. So fire up all those Windows VMs, patch them, and then, or delete them, whatever.
There's an idea.
And then the big news of the week is Adobe. They released a security bulletin. Basically, they didn't actually use the exact phrase arbitrary code execution and remote code execution, but that's what they meant. They just phrased it differently. It's in Flash and Adobe Air.
Oh, yikes.
Which makes it exceptionally dangerous because it means visit website with dodgy Flash, get hacked.
Or be running something like Twirl over Adobe Air and you could get hacked too?
Well, it wouldn't be so much Twirl. You'd want to install... Well,
Twirl runs on Air.
Twirl runs on Air, but I wonder how you could trick it into... I don't know, actually, how you'd trip it up on Air, but if you sent Air some bogey data, you could make Air do bogey things.
Right, right.
So, yeah, Air is used an awful lot, particularly for Twitter clients, for some reason.
Yeah, because it's cross-platform that way.
Yeah. So, if you're running Flash, you should be running 10.0.42.34. Wonderful naming scheme.
I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
It's pathetic, I know. It looks like an IP address, not a version number. That's an IP address.
Definitely. So does Flash update itself? I mean, do you just suddenly get a message like in Firefox that your Flash is out of date? Or do you have to actively go do it?
I do believe you have to actively go do it. Now, in the new version of Firefox, it should tell you when it figures it out. Mine hasn't figured it out yet. So I'm actually not going to upgrade mine because I use NoScript to block Flash anyway.
Right.
So I'm going to see how long it takes Firefox to cop onto itself, just as an experiment.
You know, Firefox asks for updates to things so often. For all I know, I've got the latest version. I have no idea.
Well, no, it won't give you the update. It'll tell you your Flash is out of date and send you to Adobe site.
Which I never follow, by the way. I go to Adobe site, I type it in by hand just in case. Even if it's Firefox telling me, I don't want to take a chance and I'm getting scammed there.
Yeah, so if you go to Adobe's website and download the latest version of Flash from there, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I'm going to put that link in the show notes there, too.
And then Adobe Air will update itself.
Okay. Good.
And when you try to launch an Adobe Air app, it will say, oh, there's a new version of Air. And you click yes, and it goes and gets it free.
Great. You know, one thing we didn't say last week, we were always very quick to say, make sure you wake up your Windows VMs, and if you're on regular Windows directly, you know, make sure you run software update or whatever they call it, Windows update. But when we talked about OS X having an update, we didn't say, go run the update, make sure software update's running, run it automatically, click yes. You know, we didn't actively say that, so I wanted to say it one more time.
That's true, although OS X comes with the updates on by default, and I can't imagine anyone would turn them off.
Yeah, but I know there's a tendency to just go, you know, you can...
I'll do that later. It says
reboot.
Yeah,
it's too hard, you know.
Well, my Mac hasn't been rebooted in 2 months. Why should I reboot?
All right, I guess we've got some follow-ups from last week.
Just some, well, they're not necessarily from last week, but I know we did talk, we always talk about browsers and stuff. And we mentioned that if you're on Windows, Chrome is available, but on the Mac, of course, Chrome is not available. Well, now it kind of, sort of is. It's a public beta, so us plebs can get it and run it. But it's not Gmail-type beta. It's like a genuine, actual beta.
Now, why do you say that?
It's still missing functions.
Ah, missing functions as opposed to dodgy. It doesn't seem too dodgy yet to me.
I've spoken to a few people who've been running it. I actually don't like Chrome, so I have no interest in running it. But apparently it is actually stable, but even simple things like seeing and deleting your cookies is not possible because they haven't implemented the interface yet.
Ah, okay.
So it's a technology preview is probably what I'd call it.
I'm running it, and it seems pretty stable. It seems pretty fast. I know a couple of people, I think Matt Hillier was saying that he had done some tests of it up against Safari and didn't see any speed increase. I don't know, I think it's fun. I like trying new browsers.
It's the tabs on top thing.
Tabs on top thing?
It does not do that on the Mac.
The tabs are above, oh yeah, they are above the URL, but you know what, that's funny, I didn't even notice it.
It makes my brain hurt.
Huh.
So, no, I didn't use Safari at all while Safari temporarily had its tabs on top. It's a bad idea, and Apple saw sense, and I hope Google do too someday.
You know, it's funny. I remember that irritating the daylights out of me. So they must have done this in some way that it's a little better, because it... It didn't annoy me at all. And I remember it really bugged me in Safari. You're right. When you hover across the tabs, they kind of glow as you hover across them. When you hit the plus button, the tab kind of grows up. There's some nice little animations, a lot of themes, you know. It's very pretty. It's very pretty. Very pleasing, I think.
Yeah, I might give it a go at some stage, but for now, it doesn't interest me too much.
All right. Well, a link is in the show notes if you're intrigued.
Yes, exactly. What does interest me a little more is the rumored update to Thunderbird. Well, it was quite strongly rumored.
It was told verbatim to us from the chairperson.
Yeah, but it's out. So it's 3.0, no beta, no other sort of no alpha, no other... you know what I mean. It's a real release.
It's real.
And yeah, it's real. I've been running it. I stopped running it because, well, it indexes all of your email, which in my case is an awful lot of email, and I installed it about 5 minutes before starting to talk to Allison in the pre-show. And I couldn't understand why my internet was completely crawling and my CPU was at 100%. It's because it was downloading and indexing all of my email on all of my IMAP servers.
Well, so just to make sure we didn't skip a step there, Thunderbird is an email client made by the Mozilla Foundation, and so it's open source and all that kind of good stuff. Might be worth taking a look at, though.
First impressions are they've cleaned up the UI, they've added in tabs, which I think is a brilliant idea. Tabs rock. And for a moment I had a heart attack, because the default view now is like mail.app, where all of your inboxes are together and all of your trashes are together and all of your sent items are together. And I thought that that was it. I was never going to use Thunderbird again. But then I noticed there was these sort of arrows at the top which allow you to change views. And one view over to the right was the view I like. So I'm happy again.
You know what I love about you is your initial review. In fact, I don't think I should let you tell me what you think of something for the first month. Because your initial review is almost always, I hate everything.
Not always.
You know, you made your pick of the year was Aperture. And your review of Aperture on this show, I was ready to kill you because you told me so many things you hated about it.
Yeah, but then I got to the good stuff.
Well, right. But I mean, it certainly was not a glowing review. And yet that was your pick of the year. So I think you need some time to play with it.
I still don't gloss over the flaws.
Oh, no, and I don't think you should.
I love Aperture to bits, but it's no iPhoto.
All righty. So maybe we'll hear some more about Thunderbird in the weeks to come.
Well, I'm certainly going to be, I'm going to be using it full-time one-third of the time, because it's on one out of my three computers. So I guess that means I'll be using it a third of the time. So, yeah, I'm going to be using it heavily, so I shall see how it goes.
Well, good. I've downloaded it, and it's probably indexing my stuff while we're talking and going to ruin all kinds of things, but certainly initial setup wasn't hard at all. All right, I picked the next topic, which is a good thing since you being shattered and all. It's something that's exciting to me. As you should have heard earlier in the show, if we have successfully had my audio clip embedded in this episode, I gave up on the Apple TV and I have a Mac Mini now. And I kind of wanted to talk about it as the underappreciated device at the Apple Store. I can't tell you how many times I hear someone say on a podcast or on a radio show or whatever, say, well, you know, the cheapest Mac is $999 or $900. You know, no, there's a $600 computer. Yeah, $600 computer too.
So, it's completely the forgotten child. Maybe because it's so small, no one sees it in the shop.
When I tell people about it, I say, you know, if you set your Kleenex box on it, you're going to go, where the hell did my computer go? I can't find it.
Well, the first time my mom saw my Mac Mini, she was like, where's your computer? I said, no, that's the computer. That's a hard drive or something. No, where's your computer? No, trust me, that's it. It's all there. Look, there's even a little slot for the CD. What?
You know, my friend Drew is a PC user, and he bought his first Mac, and he bought a Mac Mini. And the reason he bought the Mac Mini was because his children kept climbing on his tower.
Oh, no.
So he figured if he just had it in a Mac Mini, they couldn't climb on it. And I thought that was a really interesting choice there.
Yeah, you just stick it underneath the monitor and forget about it.
Yeah. Now, you've had one for a long time, right? What do you do with yours?
I don't have mine anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No, I sold it after it was like 6 years old or something.
And again, probably got good resale value for it, right?
Well, I could have got more, but the guy was a friend, so I was nice. So.
But still, could you sell a six-year-old PC versus a six-year-old Mac Mini?
I'd have to pay people to take a six-year-old PC off me.
Right.
But no, I got the very, very first Mac Minis. It was on the first container load to hit Ireland. I ordered literally the moment Steve Jobs got off stage announcing them. So it was a G4. I had the foresight to stick in a hefty chunk of RAM. Now, this is obviously a while ago, so I upped it to a gigabyte, which is a good take.
You went crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we are talking 6 years ago, so it actually was quite insane, and everyone thought I was mad. But 6 years later, the thing, I mean, I sold it only a few months ago, and it's running Leopard. And it's running Leopard really well.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they just keep working. They're not underpowered. I don't think they are anyway. They're nippy little machines, and the form factor is really something to fall in love with.
Yeah, I just bought, so I bought the bottom of the line to act as my media server, and let's see, it's $599, and it's an Intel Core 2 Duo, 2.26 gigahertz with 160 gig hard drive and 2 gigs of RAM. You know, for what I'm going to use it for, that's, you know, 2 gigs of RAM is going to be fine. I'm not going to be running 28 applications. I'm probably going to be playing DVDs and things like that. But what's great is one of the things Steve wanted to be able to do with the Apple TV and why we hacked it was to try to watch my live show on the big screen. And, of course, the Apple TV, even when hacked, couldn't do Flash, but this does it perfectly. So across the room, you can do it. What amazes me is this little tiny box can drive my HDTV. I mean, it's a 55-inch monitor, basically. And it looks spectacular on there. It's just amazing.
Well, the way I look at a Mac Mini is you take a laptop, say the 13-inch MacBook Pro, or the 13-inch MacBook Pro, you take off the screen, you take out the keyboard, and then you just rearrange the parts into vertical orientation, and that's a Mac Mini.
Right?
It's a hard drive from a laptop, it's a motherboard from a laptop, it's all the components are from a laptop. So they're small and they don't pop out too much heat.
Excellent. Yeah, it's just this tiny little cute thing.
It's also come a very, very long way in terms of connectivity. The first gen Mac Mini had twice as many vents on the back, which meant that you had a whopping total of two USB ports.
Oh. Now it's got
keyboard
four.
And mouse. I thought it's five these days.
Oh, it could be. There's a whole snot load of them back there.
Yeah, there's a load of them back there. So I had two USBs, one FireWire, one Ethernet, and a 56K modem. The other thing it did not have is audio in.
Audio in. Oh, okay.
So I had to buy a little Griffin iMic to get a mic into my Mac Mini when I was starting to podcast.
Oh, okay. Actually, yeah, I think you're right. There are five. Yeah. So there's five USB ports. There's a display port, you know, in case you wanted a Mac Mini hooked up to a 24-inch cinema display. What is that next one?
There's a mini DVI.
Mini DVI, yeah, okay, and FireWire and Ethernet
two
jack.
At once. So there is a Mac Mini in the house here. It's not mine. It's my better half's, but it's running with two monitors, and one of them is just in the display port, and one of them is in the mini DVI.
Oh wow! Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it lets you stretch the desktop. Now they're both VGA monitors. We just bought two adapters, one for each target. Plug them in.
Now, one of the things we did, so we have our home theater is all run through an audio-video receiver, so it's got a whole truckload of HDMI inputs and then one HDMI output that goes to the TV, and that way you can switch everything from one remote. You don't have to keep talking to each device separately, but there was no HDMI out on the Mac Mini, and I was kind of concerned about that, and I think I tweeted about it, and somebody said, you can actually use, there's an adapter that'll take USB for the digital audio and then the display port, and it combines them and gives you an HDMI female, and then you connect an HDMI cable to that over to your receiver. So it does, it will combine the audio and video together. Now, they're now, price.com, I have never paid more than about four dollars for anything, maybe six on a big day. This was $36 for this little adapter. So I think it's probably because it's, you know, incredibly specialized, the number of people who would want to buy it. So you're not going to be, you know, producing that in mass quantities or anything.
It's got to be doing a bit of actual number crunching in there to turn the USB into the various bits and bobs. So there's probably more going on there than your average cable.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bart. It does have a little flat box in the middle of it that's got, you know, maybe 2 inches long by an inch wide. It's probably got a little circuit board in there that's doing some math. But they also have one that's will take the digital audio output, not from USB, but from the digital audio output connector, and add that to the DisplayPort connector and also give you HDMI. But MonoPrice had that one for like $45, and it was out of stock anyway, so I went for the $36 one.
Yeah, sounds good. If it does the job.
Yeah, it works perfectly. So I'm intrigued. You know, all these years I've wanted some excuse to buy a Mac Mini. I didn't have a real good reason, but now I got to have one.
Oh, they're great little machines. And are you going to run something like Boxy on it to give you more of a integrated media center experience?
I think we'll start playing with that. I don't quite understand why I need Boxy, but I guess We don't watch a lot of internet TV exactly. I mean, we put things like podcasts on it, but it never occurred to me to actually need something like Boxy, but I think we'll go check it out now. And Don McAllister says I have to check out Plex, but I don't know what Plex is, but I must need it.
Actually, I don't know what that is either, but if Don says you must, you must.
Exactly. It's a media center.
Of course, you already have a TiVo, if memory serves.
Yes.
If you didn't have a TiVo, ITV may also be something to look into, which basically turns your Mac into a TiVo.
Yeah, I've played around with that, but we don't have any kind of over-the-air signal here, basically, at all. I mean, it's just garbage, so everything we have is off the cable anyway.
Okay.
So I think that's probably going to wrap us up here, but I just wanted to suggest to people, you might have forgotten about the Mac Mini and consider it as an interesting device that you might find a use for in your house, and it's cheaper dirt.
It's also, I think, the ideal first Mac.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good point. My friend Linda had two PCs that started imploding at the same time, and she was just sick to death of it. And she said, "Allison, I just need to, go to a Mac. What do I get?" And I said, and she didn't, money was an object. And I said, "Okay, we'll go pick up a Mac Mini," and she was instantly happy with it. Now she slowly started to admit, "Okay, this is driving me crazy. So it's not been completely smooth, but she was pretty happy with it right off the bat. So you're right. I think it's a good first Mac.
Well, it means you probably, if you're a PC user, you probably have a good screen, you probably have a good keyboard, and you probably have a good mouse.
Right.
So it would be a waste to throw them all in the bin. Just take the big box, hit it a kick, and stick in a Mac Mini.
Yeah, I've got another friend who wants to get a Mac for his 7-year-old son, and he says, "Yeah, I'm going to get him that 21.5-inch iMac."
Wow, and I want to be his son.
Well, and the kid's 7. And I said, "Come on, dude, you get $600, you could get a little Mac Mini. I mean, you probably got a keyboard, video, a mouse." And I said, "Or get yourself a new monitor and give that one to the kid. You got an excuse to upgrade yourself. Still probably save a couple $100. And he goes, "Yeah, but that iMac's really pretty." Yeah, he's going to be one of ours soon.
Don't mention iMacs to me.
Oh,
I think it's now 6 weeks since my iMac was ordered in work, and I still ain't got no iMac.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they on back order?
Well, for procurement reasons, we have to use a reseller.
Uh-huh.
And Apple have said that the model is restricted, which means they don't have enough of them. And there is no estimated shipping date.
Oh, you're kidding.
Now, part of me thinks it may be a good thing, considering so many of the 27 inches are arriving completely broken.
Oh, and is that what you're getting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like the tone of voice the way you said that.
Yeah, so I don't mind waiting. It's going to be my machine for a long time.
Okay, well, yeah, at the rate they're... Maybe that is why it's not coming, because they're trying to figure out what's going on. From what I understand, they're coming with cracked screens.
Yeah, it happened to Michael King, one of the regular IMPers.
Huh. Yeah, it's been way too many. You might hear one or two, but...
The theories we have in IMP are that either there's some sort of bolt or something behind the screen, and when the screen gets pressed a little, it snaps across something, or the padding is putting a little too much pressure on the screen, and, someone slides two boxes next to each other. It doesn't have to bang them hard, but the styrofoam just pushes that screen. It's a big screen, so the glass is going to give a little, but if you push it too far...
Right. I'll never forget, years ago I was working with HP, and we kept getting equipment that was broken, and they kept saying, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Nobody else has this problem." And then we started, taking pictures and sending them, and then we had their salespeople come to our offices to watch them be unpacked. And I finally got them to go back and look at it, and they did a fantastic job of going back and just reviewing everything about their design. And what they found was they basically needed to hire some industrial designers of the boxes, of the packaging, because they had things like, this is quite a long time ago, but they had foam that had braces in it, and the brace was right where the zip drive was. So when the box would get hit, the foam would jam into the zip drive, and it was knocking it off the rails in the back and things like that. So I'm sure it's an underappreciated talent to know how to do that, but maybe Apple needs to talk to the people HP found to fix their problems.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I also do remember when I moved offices once, and this is back in the CRT days, and our lovely transportation department, I get into my office, the bezel is cracked on my monitor, and there's a footprint on the face of the monitor.
Whoa, okay.
I didn't touch it. I got the head of transportation to come over to see it with his own eyes going, excuse me?
I think transportation owe me a monitor.
Yeah, and they did. So it was, that was, don't step on the monitor. That's one of the, they should put that on the checklist.
Is the monitor on the ground? Check. Maybe it shouldn't be.
All right. Well, I promised I'd wind this up quickly for you. You've held up admirably after your 8 hours of podcasting yesterday, Bart. I appreciate you still making it on the show.
Not at all. I wouldn't miss a weekend unless I had to.
There you go. Now,
we also very much appreciate the fact that you spent an hour of your Saturday giving us a handout. So thank you for helping us out.
Oh, that was a lot of fun.
Very fun segment.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed myself. So you've got somebody secret in store for Chit Chat Across the Pond next week when I'm gone?
I have preliminary arrangements made with someone who people should recognize, but whose voice we haven't heard in a while.
Right. Cool. Well, we won't spill the beans until we're sure.
They're not Belgian.
Well, because that wouldn't be across the... Well, it's across a little part of the pond.
Two little itty-bitty ponds. No, but it's a country beginning with a C, so we've just moved up one in the alphabet.
Ooh, there we go. All right, well, I can't wait to hear it, and good luck while I'm gone, Bart. I hand the reins over to you.
Well, enjoy yourself in sunny Mexico. I hope it is sunny. Lots of fun on the beach, and we'll chat to you all refreshed and renewed for the week after.
That's right. We'll see you then.
Okay, until then, happy computing.
Well, the chat room's yelling at me that this show is not long enough because it's a little closer to a normal length show. I mean, what are we at, about 51, 52 minutes, something like that here. But these are the lunatics, the crazy people. These are the people that come to the live show at podfeed.com/live at 5 p.m. GMT minus 8 on Sunday nights. Now, with Bart doing the show next week, I know his internet is not up to doing a live show, so don't be looking for us at that time on next Sunday night. But you do really need to send him some reviews here. You know, help the guy out. Don't make him do the whole show on his own. Kind of like I don't do the show on my own. Evan sent in a review, so he has that, and I actually sent in a Cameo review. But if it's after Monday, don't bother to send this because I'm going to be out of here about that time, sometime Tuesday, maybe early Wednesday, I forget. So get something in for me as soon as you hear this. Now, Bart really does want to play the Dumb Question Corner music, so try to come up with some dumb questions for him, would you? Send them to me and I'll forward it onto him. Now, I may be online a bit in the evenings. I think there's internet in the hotel lobby. But for the most part, I'm going to be basking on a warm, sandy beach. So good luck with all that snow and freezing rain and stuff like that, would you? Anyway, I guess I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. So thanks for listening and stay subscribed.